seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It's a rough night for the Utah Jazz. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I'm going to be back with you on the afternoon drive. Jazz fans are livid still today about the outcome of last night's game. The Jazz fall in overtime, 131 to 123. Good news, Jazz fans. The Lakers lost to the Kings last night, so you're still up on LA. You didn't lose anything on them. But did Jazz fans have a reason to be upset? Yeah, there were some bad calls in this contest. The biggest one to me was Royce O'Neal falling out of bounds. Plain as day, he did not fall out of bounds. It should have been Jazz basketball. That was the big one for me. But other than that, I've never really been a guy that's blamed the officials. There are times where you look at things and you say, what's he looking at? How is that possible? I just don't know if I can blame that entire loss on the officiating crew. The Jazz had, what, two 10-point leads in this game? Blew them? Happens. You're on the road, you lost to a very good team. I don't think it's that big of a deal. Donovan Mitchell did. Donovan Mitchell was livid last night. And look, as a fan, as a media member, you love to see this. You love to see this type of attitude out of your superstar. Yeah, he was upset last night. Here's the thing about Mitchell. He was highly inefficient last night. Some calls did not go Utah's way, and I understand that. And they had some calls that did not go their way, but Donovan Mitchell was 12 of 34 from the field last night. So it's not as if Utah played great, and they were still in the game. I'm looking at the silver lining. It happens in the NBA. It happens. You play a 72-game season. Sometimes you go out and calls don't go your way. Look, if you're a Jazz fan, don't be upset. Don't be angry about the outcome of last night's game because, as I alluded to, you didn't lose anything with it. And as we sit here right now, the Jazz still well out in front in the Western Conference standings. I guess you have to worry about Phoenix. That's who you have to worry about right now because they're the 2 seed. But the Lakers and Clippers at 24 and 13, the Jazz at 27 and 9, you're fine. 3.5 up on both of those squads. You get those two on the other side of the bracket, you're fine. It'll be okay. Jazz will be back next week. Now they head into the All-Star break. We're going to pause from the NBA talk today. I do want to talk UFC. We haven't talked UFC in a long time. And we're going to get into that on the show today. And I don't even think we really need to dive into the UFC 259 card, which is not a bad card, by the way, this weekend. But I want to talk about Amanda Nunes, who, in my mind, is, without a doubt, the greatest female mixed martial artist of all time. She is phenomenal. And I like the UFC. I don't love the UFC. I'm not a guy that has to watch every single pay-per-view. I'm not that guy. There are individuals in the UFC that are so good that wherever I'm at, I got to stop and I got to watch. She's that person to me in the UFC. She is so far ahead of the field. And this isn't Ronda Rousey. Like, I never bought into the Ronda Rousey hype. Never did. She was beating up Zumba moms. This division has evolved. And it's so good. We're seeing actual mixed martial artists out of the women's ranks now. And nobody can really stand up to Amanda. She's had like over the last 5 or 6 years, she's had like 2 or 3 really difficult challenges. That's it. I mean, she dominated Rousey. She dominated Holly Holm. She's phenomenal. She's in action this Saturday. So I want to talk about the women's division in the UFC. And joining us to do that a little bit later will be Larry Pepe, one of the greatest MMA minds you will ever meet. I'm looking forward to that. Also, next segment here on the show, we're going to catch up with Coach Ted Bianco with the Carbon Lady Dinos. He's going to join us over the phone. Coach Bianco calling it a career That's right. He's retiring, stepping down, rather, from basketball coach, girls basketball coach at Carbon High. At the end of the year, he's stepping down from the athletic director position at Carbon. He'll take that role at Juan Diego High School. So Coach Bianco will join us next segment here on Drive Time Sports. Let's take a look at some of the other national headlines. We'll go to the NFL, the Denver Broncos and Von Miller. Seems like this relationship is approaching its end, right? George Patton said today that the team wants Von Miller back, but they're waiting to hear more on potential legal issues that Miller may have. And he did not rule out a discussion about a pay cut for a return. The quote, "We're still working through it with Vaughn, his agent, and in regards to the legal process, we're just going to let the legal process play out. But obviously, it's a serious situation. We want to let it play out before we comment on that." Now, again, we're talking about one of the greatest players in Bronco history, an 8-time Pro Bowl selection, Super Bowl 50 MVP, has an option clause in his contract that if the Broncos pick it up, he's guaranteed $7 million of his $17.5 base salary. And then the final year of a 6-year deal that he signed back in 2016. The Broncos are still waiting on a decision from the district attorney about whether Miller's going to be charged in the wake of an investigation with Parker, Colorado police. Now, neither the police nor the district attorney's office have released details on what charges he's facing. But obviously, it's big enough that the Broncos are saying, we're going to wait. They want to bring him back, but they're going to wait, and they're going to see how this plays out. So I guess maybe a little bit more of a serious situation than I thought in Denver. At this point, I don't believe Von Miller will return to the Denver Broncos. I think a change of scenery is going to be good for all involved, especially with the route that Denver's going. I don't expect Von Miller to be back. Other NFL news and notes. The Detroit Lions have told Desmond Trufant that he is going to be released before the start of the new league year, which begins in 13 days. And March 17th, it's coming up. Detroit owes Trufant $3.5 million in guaranteed money for the upcoming season. But that was reported earlier today by ESPN that Trufant will be looking for a new place to play going into next season. And some of the biggest news coming out of the NFL, Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers, they have agreed to a new deal for the 2021 season. The Steelers did not disclose the terms, but according to Adam Schefter, Roethlisberger reduced his pay to $14 million from $19 million in the final year of his contract, and then he's going to spread that cash payment through 2022. That lowers the team's salary cap hit by more than $15 million. You knew this was coming. It's similar to what we saw with Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints for many years. Now New Orleans is paying up, and that's the kicker. Eventually, you have to pay up. But Roethlisberger making that sacrifice to win right now, $15 million cleared up for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Roethlisberger was previously under contract for the 2021 season, but it was coming at like a $41 million cap hit. Just couldn't happen for a 39-year-old quarterback. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Again, we got a lot coming up on the show. We're going to talk local sports, Coach Ted Bianco, plus I want to dive into the UFC, a conversation we haven't had in a little while here on Drive Time Sports. That's all straight ahead when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're going to continue our season wrap-up interviews as we continue to move through the high school basketball season. Yesterday, an opportunity to catch up with Coach Jared Butler to put the final touches on the Carbon boys season. Today, we're going to do that on the girls' side of the court. And joining us right now over the phone, we have head coach Ted Bianco. Coach, always a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Definitely, Coach. There's so much to talk about. We'll start first off by really just recapping the tremendous season that this girls' basketball team had. I know you and I had this conversation following the game against Grantsville on Saturday. A lot of question marks going into the season surrounding this team. Lost a large group of seniors, lost a floor general that you had for 3 years, lost an all-around, you know, stat sheet stuffer in Abby Sacamano. But when you look at it, these girls performed beautifully and exceeded a lot of expectations in taking fourth place in state.
Right. I agree with that 100%. I mean, this group did a fantastic job, and that's what it's all about. So I couldn't be more proud of this group and what they accomplished. And it just turned out to be, a season of to a certain extent, some surprises, but by the end of the season, those surprises became expectations, which is what you want to see as a coach.
There's always the talk, Coach, the goal, it's to win a state championship, obviously, every single season. I've always had this idea that the perfect scenario for any team going into a season would be to get to the semifinals. And my reasoning behind that is there's only four teams that get that opportunity. And at that point in time, you control your own destiny. And ultimately, that's where you guys got. You got to the semifinals. You were 8 minutes away from going to a state championship.
Right, we were. And, we were right there. I believe we were down one with just over a minute to go. And it wasn't for a couple of turnovers and some things that didn't quite go our way. We probably are playing in that game. But, to our credit, our kids, I thought they fought hard. As hard as I've seen them fight all year long, just for those games, and I was really proud of what they accomplished this year. They were a fantastic group, and a group of kids that I'll remember for the rest of my life. They worked their guts out, and they were just a fun group to work with all year long.
Showed a lot of grit, Coach, in that quarterfinals matchup against Richfield. Never easy to go up against a team for a third time, and it was a game in which the girls very easily could have quit. But you saw the foundation, I guess, that was laid over the last 4 years. And we can talk about McKenna and Alex Cartwright being a part of that special group that you had for the last 3 years. But you really saw that grit, determination, and the physicality take over in the game against Richfield. And ultimately, I thought that's what won you guys that game.
Well, it was a matter of playing kind of like we did the first time we beat them at our place. We had to overcome a deficit. We had to overcome them trying to stall with the ball. And I thought that hurt them more than it helped them. And we were able to overcome that. And our defense, I thought, was superb there down the stretch, especially when we went to our full court man and was trapping and they were turning the ball over and we were getting scores off of it. So, our kids, every time out, we're going to win this. That was the comments that they made to each other. We're going to win this. We got this. We can get over this hump. And they played their tails off. And that proved to me what I'd been seeing ever since the Desert Hills game last December, was that this group could play with anybody.
In this game, Coach, again, I mentioned the two seniors, McKenna and Alex Cartwright. And over the weekend, we saw McKenna not shoot her highest percentage from the field, but great players find a way to score points even when the shot's not falling. And she made a living at the foul line. A lot of that was due to the fact that she's fearless in driving the ball to the basket and playing a physical brand of basketball. And we saw Alex Cartwright really make the right decisions, the right plays out on the floor. How happy were you with what you saw out of your senior group?
Well, I think they went out the way that all seniors should. I think they went out and they should have pride in what they've accomplished. I think their last games of the season, they were playing as hard in their last games as they were at the beginning of the year. And they were good leaders for their teammates. And they showed that on the court. Alex didn't really light up the stat sheet for us in the scoring department or some of the other areas. But I'll tell you what, she worked her tail off against players that were bigger and stronger than her, and she made it hard for them to score. And she was a huge part of every win we had this year, and she gets a lot of credit for what we accomplished this year just because of how hard she worked.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Ted Bianco with the Carbon Lady Dino Basketball Squad. Coach, so in a nutshell, when you go back and you look at the year, what was the high point for you in this team this season?
We had a lot of high points. I felt like at the beginning of the season, our how we played at the Vernal tournament, I thought that was a huge ego boost for us. I thought it helped us a ton in gaining some confidence. And then coming home and having to play that Desert Hills game over at the BDEC this year, and watching that team watch us warm up, and they kind of, you could see on their faces and some of the things that they were, the comments that they were making, that they were going to, come out and clean our clocks. But I thought our kids just battled that home game. And they came out and they jumped on us early. I think they got up 6 or 8 points in the first quarter on us, and we just battled back. I believe we tied it up right at the end of the first quarter or right at the start of the second quarter. And then we got ourselves going, got a little bit of a lead, and just kept doing our thing and sharing the basketball, playing good defense, getting rebounds, pushing the floor, and they just could never take the lead back. And that that, in my opinion, that was the game that sent us in the direction that we finished our season in. And then our game at South Sevier, that was a huge win for us. We jumped out there and we jumped on top of them at the very beginning of the game and never looked back. And that, in my opinion, that was probably the biggest surprise for me, is how poorly we made some of their players play by the way we were playing defense. And we did some different things with our defense in that game that really surprised them a lot. And it gave our kids a lot of confidence. And then as the season rolled along, when we got into the state tournament, winning that game at home against Summit Academy and kind of struggling at the beginning of it, having a freshman step up and really take charge and start scoring some points for us, that really boosted her confidence, boosted the team's confidence, and gave us a good send-off to go to Richfield last weekend. And of course, playing in those three games this past weekend, it was surreal to see what we did against Richfield and how close we could have been to playing in the state championship game.
Coach, there's always talk with other I had this conversation with about four or five different coaches this weekend about the program that they want to build and the programs that they use as kind of a template. Okay, this is where we need to get. And when I look at this Carbon basketball team over the last 10, 12, 13 years, you see constant almost overachievement from underclassmen. And we got that again this year. And we can mention Maddie and Amaya, but there's other underclassmen on this team that play above what their class rank says they are. How do you develop that? How have you developed that at Carbon High School over the last decade?
Well, for us, it's not been about what class you're in. I've never believed that seniors should play with seniors and juniors with juniors and so forth and so on. Your best players have to be able to perform for you at any level. And for us, we want to develop our young kids and get them ready to play varsity ball for us, hopefully in the summertime. The development that we do in the summertime in our summer camps and things like that, the tournaments that we go to, if we have a young kid that shines, we'll bring them up into the varsity level at a summer camp just to see what they can do. And then when the season starts, those kids that we feel like have shown the level of play that we need, we'll bring them up with the varsity. If we have enough kids to split into a young group and an older group, we'll bring some of those young kids up and make them practice with our older group just to give them that look in practice so that when they get thrown into the game at the varsity level, they're ready for it. So we always have tried to get our young kids involved in everything that we do at every level. And there are some young kids that will cut their time down at the sophomore or the JV level if we know they're going to play a lot of minutes at the varsity level. And that was the case a lot with Maddie this year. And she played in usually three games a night, but she would only play for 7 or 8 minutes in the sophomore game, and that would be it for her. And then maybe 7 or 8 minutes in the JV game just to get her going to play with her class, basically. But for us, it's always been about making sure that we develop the young kids and get them ready to play during that season. I don't see why you should have a young kid that has the ability never get to see the varsity floor. And I think a lot of coaches have that same philosophy.
Coach, following the game against Grantsville, you made the announcement that was your last game on the bench for Carbon High School and that you would be moving on, taking the athletic director job at Juan Diego. And obviously, there's some big shoes to fill. You've been a part of the basketball program, boys and girls, for over two decades. And you go back and look at a lot of highs for these programs. What made you come to that conclusion? And was it difficult to say, after 2.5 decades, I think I'm done?
Well, it's never easy to say that you want to step away from something that you love to do, and I've had a great ride of coaching women's basketball and boys basketball over the years. It all started back in the late '80s with Ronnie Stubbs in the men's program at CEU. He asked me to be an assistant coach when Kurt Jensen stepped down, and really got a good taste and a good feel of something that I wanted to do for the rest of my career. And then working for Dave Parr, that was a great experience. He taught me a whole lot about life and a whole lot about coaching and years. And I tell you, I have a lot of young men that I will always remember and cherish for the experiences that I had with them as a coach and the things that they did for our program. I felt like we overachieved in quite a few seasons during my tenure with the boys, with some of the teams that we had beaten, and that it felt good to see the look on those kids' face, because when I took the program over, it didn't seem like there was a lot of expectation of what the boys could do, and that changed by the end, and I appreciate all of those kids' hard work and what they did. And then when the girls' job opened up, it was an opportunity to move over to the first real full-time basketball coaching position I had at CEU and coaching girls' basketball, women's basketball, and I couldn't let that one go away, and it was hard to leave the boys' program when I did it because we had a good team coming back, and I've had a blast the last 10 years with the girls, and they've every team that we've had has been competitive and done fantastic things. You know, all 10 years we've made the quarterfinals of the state tournament. We only had one losing season in those 10 years. And we had a third place finish a few years back, a couple fourth place finishes and a fifth place finish. And I couldn't be more proud of every young lady that stepped on the court for us and the coaching staffs that I've worked with. It's been a true joy. And then when this athletic director position opened up at Juan Diego, it was something that, you know, I've got my 30 years in with the state retirement system. I can retire and I can go earn a wage on top of that. And it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. I couldn't pass it up. The hardest thing was looking at my team that day and saying, I'm sorry, ladies, this is my last game. And it's never easy to say that, but I couldn't go out with a better group, and I love those girls to death, and I'll keep my eye on them through the rest of their high school career. And I just want to say thank you to everybody that's ever played for us and been in our program or coached with us. You guys have all made a difference in my life. I hope I've made a difference in yours. And to my coaching staff, everybody that I've ever coached with, I've had a blast, and hopefully you've had a great time working for me, and I've learned from as much from you as anybody that I've ever worked with. So, and you guys in the media, you guys have always been nice to me and treated me well. And Jordan, you do a hell of a job with what you do with your radio show. And, you know, Frank Ori, same way. You guys have always been great supporters of Carbon High School. And I, for one, couldn't ask for better support from you guys, but it's been a great ride. I will always keep my eye on Carbon High School because the Dinos are in my heart. I'm a 1985 graduate of Carbon High, and Carbon County will still be my home. I'm just going to be working at a different place. So I wish everybody luck, and thank you for everything that you've ever done for me.
Well, Coach, I'm definitely going to miss our weekly conversations because they are a lot of fun.
You can still call me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we could get some Juan Diego sports on from time to time, right? There's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely.
Well, Coach, as always, such a pleasure. Congratulations, really, on a stellar coaching career at Carbon High. I wish you all the luck moving forward, and I hope we have more conversations in the very near future.
Me too. Thank you so much, Jordan.
Always a pleasure to get Coach Ted Bianco here on the show. We do have one more season wrap-up interview to get to. That'll be with Coach Lynn Tuttle of the Emory Lady Spartans. He will join us on the show tomorrow. We're going to take a quick commercial break. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
We're back on Drive Time Sports to talk MMA. UFC 259, it's coming up this weekend. I'll tell you, the price of admission is probably always worth it when you're looking at Amanda Nunes, who's going to be back on the card. One of the greatest, if not the greatest, to ever do it in the women's division. We're going to talk about that. We'll also talk about the card itself with our next guest, our MMA expert, Larry Pepe, joining us over the phone. Larry, it's been far too long. I appreciate the time again today. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely, Jordan, anytime.
Larry, you and I were talking before we hopped on the air, and I told you I kind of wanted to focus on Amanda Nunes and the fact that this girl may be the greatest of all time, and I hate the hyperbole behind it. I really do. But for whatever reason, whenever she fights, I have to stop what I'm doing to watch. I wasn't that way with Ronda Rousey. I was never that way with Holly Holm, and that says a lot considering I'm a boxing guy. But when Amanda Nunes is fighting, I have to stop and watch.
Yeah, listen, there's no question that Amanda is the greatest female mixed martial artist in the history of the sport. You know, when you go through her record, you know, she destroyed Holly Holm. She absolutely decimated, I'm looking for the right word, to be as hyperbolic as possible, in 51 seconds, Chris Cyborg, who to that point was the woman that nobody wanted to fight, and she went in and contested it on the feet and destroyed her. Valentina Shevchenko, two fights with her, won both, but those were her challenges. That is the only other legitimate challenge out there, in my opinion, for her. Ronda Rousey knocks her out in 48 seconds, destroys Miesha Tate to take the belt, submits her in the first round in under 3.5 minutes. There's just no argument for anybody else as the greatest of all time. Now, I will tell you that I still believe that the only one who can put her name in the ring ultimately is Valentina Shevchenko if they should fight again. They fought. Now, just to put it in perspective, Shevchenko is the 125-pound champion. So completely undersized against Amanda, who fights at 135 and 145, goes 10 rounds with her, does not get finished like Amanda finishes most everybody else. And if you score the 10 rounds in their totality, not that we do this, but if you look at the 10 rounds that they fought, you can make just as strong an argument that Valentina Shevchenko won in total as you can that Amanda won. And when you consider that Valentina fights a 25 and obviously a significant size and strength disadvantage, to arguably have won the better of the 50 minutes that they fought, I do hope they fight again because I think it's the only legitimate challenge that I see out there for Amanda right now, and it would definitely be a legacy builder for Shevchenko if she were able to pull it off. But as currently constituted, right now, here today, there's just no argument for anybody else.
I'm always just, I'm enamored by the idea of a journey and growth of an athlete, Larry. And I think in the sport of boxing, maybe that's something that's always intrigued me, right? Because we get to see growth. If they're amateurs, we get to follow them up the professional ranks to where they actually become a legitimate prized fighter. When you go back and you look at what Amanda's accomplished over the course of her career, and we go back to her last loss, which was 2014, if I'm not mistaken, against Kat Zingano, where have you seen the biggest growth in her? Not only her game in the cage, but just growth as a person, as an athlete, as a professional, as a prize fighter.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I would focus on is her cardio. Right. Like when you went back and you looked at her early in her career, you know, the knock on her was, hey, you know, she is hell on wheels for that first round, round and a half. But if you can get her later in the fight, then she slows down and then she's potentially there for the taking. And I mean, it's stunning when you go back and look at her record and you see that she lost to Alexis Davis in 2011. I mean, they're in different stratospheres at this point. But, of course, it was 10 years ago, but early in her career, it was her bantamweight debut, and she loses at the end of the second round. Then she loses to a woman named Sarah D'Elio, who most people couldn't pick out of a police lineup, and loses a three-round decision, right? So you see the flaw. The Kat Zingano fight, she dominates early, gets finished about a minute and a half into the third round, and hasn't lost since. So you say, well, okay, great, but she's been finishing people, so that wasn't challenged. Well, that brings up the Shevchenko fights, right? And I was wrong, by the way, I just want to clarify. She fought 40 minutes with Shevchenko because the first fight was a three-round fight. The second fight was a five-round fight. And in the Shevchenko fight, she loses the third round, but she wins the first two, and that's how she wins the fight. I'm very confident that if that fight was a five-round fight, she loses that fight. But then you see when she gets to the second Shevchenko fight, when she gets to the Raquel Pennington fight, who she finished Pennington in the fifth round about midway through. Her cardio's there. She's not tiring. She is learning how to pace herself and not just, you know, put it all out there in the first 5 or 7 minutes and then be a sitting duck. And I think that aspect of her game and her opponents knowing, because she's always been incredibly talented as far as her power, as far as her precision on the feet, and then her submission game. And I also think the thing you see in her development as well is her fight IQ, right? Like, she's not out there trying to prove things. When she fought Jermaine Durandamé, Durandamé is hell on wheels on the feet, you know, highly decorated striker. And she buzzed Amanda a couple of times. So what did Amanda do? Took her down repeatedly. Now, she was in a more immature mindset as a fighter, especially being a great striker herself. She could have gone in with the idea of, hey, I'm going to show people that I can outstrike Jermaine. Instead, she used a very smart game plan, and when she saw that she had points in the fight where she was disadvantaged on the feet, she took her down over and over and over and used her grappling advantage. So I think, for me, her cardio improvements and her fight IQ really demonstrate her growth as an athlete.
Again, Larry Pepe, our guest right now as we talk UFC 259 and talking the women's division right now in UFC. Larry, for someone who follows the sport and lives it as much as you do, if you go back, I don't know, what would we have to go back, 7, 8 years ago when Ronda Rousey was on the scene and we really started to see growth in the women's division, are you happy with where it's at today based on the level of excitement and intrigue that was presented around that division all those years ago?
Let me kind of split hairs with you. So if we're talking about the women's side of the sport in general, absolutely. I mean, what we've seen in the growth and advancement of the talent level on the women's side, it's been simply incredible. And if you go back and you look at the Ronda Rousey days where we had one division, she would just dominate everybody until she got to the Holly Holm fight, and then, of course, the Amanda fight, and then it was a wrap, right? But the reason she was dominating everybody is because, if we're being honest, the level of athlete and the level of technical proficiency that we saw on the women's side was not great. You know, like anything else, when something is new at the elite level, that doesn't immediately mean that you have 50 elite athletes out there competing in it, right? It's almost like a new sport on that side of the game. Even though we had women's fighting for quite a while, we didn't have a lot of women's fighting. And it's a numbers game, right? If you have, you know, 50 women, I'm just picking numbers, not that these are accurate, but if you have 50 women in the country who are actively, professionally pursuing a mixed martial arts career, you're not going to have 50 elite fighters. But if you have, you know, 2,000 women in the country who are pursuing that career, now all of a sudden you're going to have 100 who turn out to be elite or whatever the case is. And that wouldn't matter if it was male, female. We even saw it when they started newer divisions like the 125-pound men's division. The talent level was not very high. It's much higher now. So it's just the nature of numbers. So I would say that the growth of the women's side of the sport has been phenomenal in terms of talent, in terms of interest, in terms of growing out some of the division. Where I would not have that opinion is the 145-pound division. I think the 145-pound division really should have never been created, in my opinion, and I think history has borne me out on that. I was highly critical of creating this division when they did it in 2016. They did it solely for the reason that they had signed Chris Cyborg. Cyborg had a very difficult time. And they believed, and Cyborg believes, I don't, that she could not have gotten down to 135 pounds. So they created a division for her. The problem is, like what we just said, well, just because you create a division doesn't mean that there are tons of quality fighters out there in that division. And I believe that the time that they should have either done one-off fights for her, like catchweight fights for her, and not created an entire division, because it was basically a division of one. And I did not believe that that division would really flush out and really get a lot of talent, for the simple reason that there aren't a lot of women walking around who walk around, you know, if you fight at 145, you probably walk around at 165, 170. There's just not a lot of women walking around at that weight who are pursuing competitive mixed martial arts. So the talent field that you can pull from, just from a physical standpoint, is so much smaller that I never thought the division would amount to anything. And now, fast forward 5 years later, you have a 135-pound fighter in Amanda, who's the champion of the division. So basically, when she fights at 145, it's not because it's really her division. It's because she just cuts less weight and fights at 145. When you look at some of the people that have challenged her, challenged in air quotes, at 145, well, Holly Holm. Holly Holm is not a 145-pound fighter. She's a 135-pound fighter. There was talk of her fighting at 45. When you look at Megan Anderson, who she's fighting this weekend, is a legitimate 145-pound fighter, in that she is a big girl, and she probably can't make 135. So that makes the fight marginally interesting. But the talent gap between the two is insane. When you look at Felicia Spencer, you know, who she last beat, there's no question that Felicia Spencer could make 135. So we're 5 years into the creation of this division. Cyborg is gone, because Amanda knocked her out, her contract was up, she moved on to Bellator. So why do we still have this division? It's a division of Amanda Nunes, Felicia Spencer, who could fight at 35, and this week's challenger in Megan Anderson. So do you have a division for one? Megan Anderson arguably is the only girl fighting at 45 who probably can't make 35. So is that why we're keeping the division for 5 years for Chris Cyborg and Megan Anderson? Because that makes no sense. And I think if you want to make the argument, well, when they started it, who knew? Okay, that's fine. You know, maybe I would have been wrong. Maybe there would have been a ton of talented 145-pound female fighters who could populate that division. But we're 5 years into it. Five. And we're still struggling to even create five fighters in the division. It's no disrespect to anybody, but I think if you're 5 years into it, and the if you build it, they will come argument hasn't worked, then guess what? It's time to move on from it, tighten up 135, and anybody who wants to fight in the UFC on the women's side is going to be 15, 25, and 35, and you continue to stack those divisions as they have.
Larry Pepe, again, our guest right now. Larry, I always look forward to the conversations. It was a fun one to have. I appreciate you shedding some light on what we've seen from Amanda, also talking about the women's division and the way the UFC has handled it. I think it's a fascinating conversation. Not to take anything away from the UFC 259 card, but I enjoyed it thoroughly. Thank you for the time.
Pleasure is mine, my friend.
We're going to break one more time, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. And it's right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. And you listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
Final couple of minutes here on Drive Time Sports. Got a basketball game coming up tonight on the local front. USU Eastern looking for their third consecutive win. The men's program on the road taking on Snow College in Ephraim. Sonny Buscarini and Travis Anderson will bring you that live play-by-play call. We'll kick you out to Ephraim at about 6:30 You'll hear from Coach Bill Evans and then the play-by-play call. Tonight's a big game for the Eagles. Got off to the slow start, got one of their studs in Dontrell Hewlett back, and all of a sudden this looks like a completely different team. If they could pick up consecutive wins over Salt Lake and Snow, then they have CSI on Saturday. It's a big, big time for this USU Eastern basketball team. Don't forget, you can also listen to that game at CastleCountryRadio.com. On the show tomorrow, we are going to catch up with Coach Lynn Tuttle. That'll be our final season wrap-up interview. We got wrestling and we got high school basketball out of the way. We'll move on to spring sports starting on Monday. But coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with Coach Lynn Tuttle. We'll also talk NBA basketball as we gear up for, I'm going to use air quotes, All-Star Weekend. I guess we could call it that. Yeah, we'll talk about all that and more coming up on the show tomorrow. Want to thank Coach Ted Bianco. Want to thank Larry Pepe. Always great to get some MMA talk here on the show. For Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. I'll catch you tomorrow. Be safe. We're out.